This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself to see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states. Traditional banking sucks. A bunch of penny pushers with their ties done up to 11, charging you for accessing your own money? No thanks. That's why Chime is changing the way Americans think about banking. They offer fee-free rewarding banking and actually give you something in return for your money, rather than charging you to even look at it. They don't charge overdraft fees or monthly fees, and they have hundreds of free ATMs so you don't have to pay to physically touch your own money. In other words, it's built for you, not the one percenters. Plus, you get 5% cash back on Chime Card on a category of your choice. They even offer a really great savings rate of 3.75% APY. That's 9 times the national average. In fact, Chime members can benefit from over $1,000 of annual rewards fee-free. Friends in the US have told me they've never felt more in control of their paychecks. And who wouldn't want that? Honestly, guys, all of our American friends and most of our American listeners are already using Chime. And so should you. Chime is not just smarter banking. It's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. Head to chime.com/redhanded. That's chime.com/redhanded. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on the J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to chime.com/disclosures.
Hello and welcome to your monthly serving of our Patreon wrapper-uppera. We like to drop this into your feed to remind you that if you are not a patron, you are missing out. So we've collated some stuff for you. So we've got talking about Sumo Farah and his tragic trafficking story. We also have how North Korea are convinced that they got COVID because South Korea sent it over the border in balloons. And then we have an extract from our bonus episode all about lobotomies. Did you know that JFK's sister had one? Because she did, and now you know. And then you're going to double know more. And then, of course, we have a rundown of us winning the Listener's Choice at the British Podcast Awards for the second year in a row. So keep listening for more filled out versions of what I just said.
So anyway, moving on from urinal chat. Yeah. Did you see about Sumo Farah?
I saw it this morning.
So, Sumo Farah is a British long distance runner and the most successful British track athlete in all of history.
And also the origin of my favourite joke ever to be made on Radio 1.
Oh, what was it? I feel like you've told me before, but I can't remember.
Where they had him on as a guest, and I think it was Greg James played a game with him that was called Mo Money, Mo Problems with Mo Farah, which I think is second only to when Lamar went on Pop World and Makita Oliver and Simon Anstor interviewed him from the other side of a car park with a megaphone just so they could call it Lamar from afar.
That was so much British history just there in that sentence that so many people don't understand.
Well, I found
sorry,
it funny.
Sorry, guys. So references. You're going to have to just look them up.
Just go and fucking YouTube Pop World.
Look it up. But yeah, Sumo Farah, like I said, fucking incredible athlete,
national treasure,
face of Oral B because he has the teeth of a god, lovely and seemingly lovely human being. I've watched him on Sunday Kitchen many a time. Seems like a lovely man. But in a recent documentary by the BBC, it kind of hit headlines this morning. Mo Farah revealed that he was actually trafficked into the UK as a child and forced to work as a domestic servant. Yeah. This story of what happened to Mo Farah is very reminiscent of things like what happened to Victoria Climbier. Obviously, Mo Farah wasn't murdered like Victoria was, but it's a very similar story of how he ended up in the UK. So the Olympic star told the BBC, like I said, that his name isn't even Mo Farah. It is all Mohammed Farah, but it's actually Hussein Abdi Kahin.
And he'd always said in the past, when he was being interviewed and stuff, that he was he'd come to the UK as a refugee from Somalia with his parents. That isn't true. And he said that he wasn't ready to talk about what had actually happened to him, and he wasn't ready to face up to it. So what actually did happen, according to Samo, is that his father was actually killed in the violence in their homeland of Somalia / Somaliland, which is like a breakaway state that declared independence in 1991, but has never officially been recognized. But that's where his parents technically live or lived. And after his dad was killed, this woman who he'd never met before was just, and this is why it's very similar to Victoria Columbier. This woman he'd never met before was like, I've got a passport he can use, and I'll take him to Europe and he can go live with some relatives. And Mo says that he was excited about the opportunity. He was excited to go on a flight, so he came with her. But he didn't go to live with relatives. Instead, he was sold into slavery. He didn't even go to school until he was 12 years old. Wow. And when he did go to school, it was sport and track. And this is all from his own words, sport and track that became a lifeline for him. And this bit, I like actually was tearing up when I read this. Eventually, he confided in his PE teacher at school, a man named Alan Watkinson. Alan Watkinson is the real MVP of mm-hmm. this story, because PE teacher, Mr. Watkinson, as I think we should call him, when he found out what really happened to Mo, he called social services mm-hmm. and got Mo successfully fostered by another Somali family. Sorry, it's just so sad. And when Mo was like a teenager and he was like invited to go compete at competitions in like Europe and stuff, because Mr. Watkinson was like, you're fucking fast at running and you can run really far. He couldn't go because he didn't have any official documents and he didn't have a real British passport. And obviously this had all been outed because Mr. Watkinson had to declare the truth. Yeah. And then Mr. Watkinson stepped up again to help Mo apply for citizenship successfully in 2000. So Mr. Watkinson... changing lives.
Have you seen the I watched the interview with Mo Farah this morning, and he was like, I really think about the quote-unquote real Mo Farah. I don't know where he is.
Oh god, like, it's,
and
so
I've got
sad.
His name and his passport
yeah
and I'm a literal knight. Yeah, and like, where is he?
Yeah. And the reason we're still calling him Mo Farah is because he applied, he kept the name, and he applied for British citizenship in 2000. That's how recently, in 2000, as Mo Farah, and like, and to give him his proper name, Sir Mo Farah, because he is indeed a knight.
The realm. Yeah,
he is a knight of the realm, and deservedly so. Because,
I don't know if you've seen this. So Ian Wright, famously cries all the time.
Yeah,
he's a footballer. Not anymore. Now he's a commentator, but like one of the best sort of sports personalities of this country's ever seen. So he did a documentary where he was talking about, because the whole story of Ian Wright is that he got into football reasonably quite late, and he only went to a trial at Crystal Palace because he'd been in prison, and he had to like pay off this fine, right? It is dramatized. He was in prison for like a week, but like he had for a parking fine or something that he couldn't pay. And he was just like, okay, I'll go to this Palace trial because I might get some money out of it. Yeah. Lo and behold, becomes one of the greatest players of all time. But he does cry often, and there was a similar situation in a documentary that was made about him. I've also listened to his Desert Island Disc, in which he cries about how beautiful his wife is. Anyway, I know. Oh, Ian,
his wife. I just don't know who he's married to.
They basically, so in this documentary, he's like sat in the Arsenal stadium just like talking about how much of a camaraderie there was between the team, blah blah blah, and then his school teacher, whose name escapes me,
I've seen this,
just comes up behind him and was like, I thought you were dead.
I know, it was really sweet.
Honestly,
I've seen that.
If you watch that without crying, you are made of stone.
It's very sweet.
Love you, Ian.
Oh, it's just, yeah, some heartwarming news there. I mean, not really about what happened to Mo, but no. Mr. Watkinson.
Mick Watkinson. He should be a knight of the realm.
Yeah. Yes. Let's start a petition to make Mr. Watkinson from Feltham High School, I think it is, was where Mo went to school.
Yeah.
A fucking knight of the realm.
Like,
give him all of them. Give him all of the awards.
Make him queen.
Let's make him queen and the new Tory leader. Mr. Watkinson for PM.
Mr. Watkinson overthrows the constitutional monarchy.
I'm here for it. Let's go. But yeah, so That is some tragic stuff.
Yeah. Would you like to hear how North Korea thinks it got COVID?
Oh, yes. Who proposed? Just is it Kim Jong?
Big K, yeah.
Big K, got it. Special K.
Special K says that COVID-19 floated over the border from South Korea in balloons. And which is less ridiculous than it sounds, and that the people of North Korea should stop touching alien objects, and that will stop them getting COVID-19. It sounds ridiculous. However, it's not a new idea. When I went to the DMZ however many fucking years ago, there was, obviously you never know what's true and what's not, because the DMZ is not only a tourist trap, it's completely run by American GIs who have their own propaganda to spin. But the argument was that they were saying that North Korea fill balloons full of rubbish, like bin juice, and then float it over the border just as like a protest. Oh. So the balloon idea isn't new. Oh. So maybe Special K just got wind of it, being like, hey,
wait a second. COVID.
Yeah.
COVID balloons. Well, there you go. I believe it.
I mean, there's not a lot I don't believe anymore.
Take it or leave it. Hello, I'm Sruti.
Hello. I'm Hannah. Sorry, I forgot.
No, I was like, oh, shall I take that back?
No, sorry. It's just because we just recorded shorthand and we don't do names on shorthand.
No.
So I was just like, well, what year is it?
Who knows? The combinations, the permutations of all of these have gone completely out of the window. So it doesn't matter. You know who we are because you're a fucking patron. So welcome to your bonus episode for the month of July. I am pumped for this episode, but I think it's going to scare me. It's about lobotomies.
Oh, yeah. The real good stuff.
We're getting into it. So, yes, we are looking at lobotomies today, the unbelievably grim medical procedure that was carried out tens of thousands of times across the Western world, and how something as obviously damaging as taking an ice pick to a person's brain was allowed to enter routine medical practice. But to do that, we've got to shoot back, all the way back, to the real Pasto times.
I think the furthest we've ever gone, the furthest back we have ever travelled in our time machine, which is the power of our minds. We are talking about prehistoric ancestors here, and what they would do is they'd drill a hole into the skull of some poor bastard with a headache in an attempt to free the evil demons trapped inside. If you are familiar with his Dark Materials trilogy, the beginning of Northern Lights is all about trepanning.
Love it. I love a bit of trepanning, though. If I had been around back then, I'd probably just keep my headache to myself. I'd just keep it quiet. Just hope it went away. Go chew on some willow bark. Fucking hell. Because I remember, I was obviously like a really fucking creepy little kid, so I was reading about all this when I was very young anyway. But I remember there is a horror film that is like a very unknown horror film that I would recommend. It's got Sean Bean in it.
Okay.
And like some blonde girl and some woman, I can't remember. None of them are like known actors apart from Sean. And it's, I think it was shot on like the Isle of Man or something. And it's just like a little cottage on this island in the middle of nowhere surrounded by sheep. And there's a ghost, and the ghost was of a former sheep farmer who trepanned all his sheep and trepanned his kid.
Oh.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
I think it's called like The Dark. I'll find it and put a link in the episode description.
Don't lie.
If you're mad about No, I won't. I'll try. But I've given you a good enough description that if you want to find it, you can find it. Because I obviously won't do that.
Sean Bean trepanning, probably.
Sean Bean trepanning sheep. You'll find it.
So this gruesome technique, which we've already given the game away, it was called trepanning, still is called trepanning. And it's generally considered to be one of the oldest surgical procedures in history. Archaeologists have actually found trepanned Neolithic skulls in France that are over 7,000 years old. Evidence of this grim practice has been found the world over, from the Aztecs to the ancient Chinese and the Romans. Astonishingly, though, it seems like the survival rate of drilling a hole into someone's actual head is way higher than you may think. Prince Philip of Orange was trepanned 17 times.
Ooh.
And he only actually died as a result of a poorly carried out enema, which messed up his intestines.
Wow, that's something.
Which, would I take that over a hole in the head? I don't know. I think if I was given a choice, I'd have to go hole in the head.
Yeah, I mean, the holes in the head didn't kill him. The enema did.
Yeah.
So one huge modern proponent of trepanation is the Dutch librarian Hugo Bart Hughes.
Three first names.
Serial killer. All librarian. Also, I love this guy's just like, I'm a librarian, but I'm a big fan of this. Mm. I'm going to really push for this.
Yeah, with zero medical training. Just yeah. Drill a hole in my brain, baby.
Go for it. So Hughes was refused a medical degree from the University of Amsterdam for his advocacy of LSD research, which I, you know...
Fine.
We've come full circle now. I feel like everybody's into that. Everybody's looking into it. I went to a very interesting talk about psychedelic drugs and their use for treating psychiatric conditions. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating. And he actually... What's that got? What, who is Maria Juana?
Marijuana.
Marijuana? Maria Juana? You should leave that in, actually, because I was reading the script and then it just has a random line where it says he named his daughter Maria Juana. And I was like, who's Maria Juana? Like, why is that relevant to this story? I see.
And I was just looking at her across the table, waiting for the penny to drop.
Pennies dropped into the hole in my head. So Hughes actually drilled a hole into his own skull. There you go. You know, you've got to walk the walk.
He certainly did walk the walk.
Right into a fucking wall after a hole in his head. But he did this in 1965 using a foot-operated electric dentist drill. Oh my God, I can't cope. That is some fucking nightmare shit. And then he went on to write a book about the perceived benefits of trepanning titled Borehole. Sure. Why not?
What happened to you?
Hughes.
What happened to you, Hugo Bart?
Well, I think it's the story of a man who wasn't allowed to become a doctor and had to become a librarian and then was really angry about it. Jesus.
I actually know someone who had to have a borehole. Yeah, she had a stroke. And in Celebration, Florida, which is a town built by Disney, she was there having dinner. She was at my mum's wedding, actually. She had a stroke in a restaurant and had to go to hospital and they drilled a hole in her head. Now she's fine.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. What do I fucking know? And Hughes was also fine because in the end, he only actually died of heart disease at the age of 70 in 2004.
So what we're saying is everyone, get a dentist drill off Amazon.
If you want to, it might not kill you.
It might, yeah.
You might just die of some sort of horrible stroke or cardiovascular disease much later in your life.
Yeah. So he didn't die of the hole in his head, but he did leave behind numerous writings on trepanation, which influenced British-born Eton-educated Oxford graduate Boris Johnson. I'm kidding.
Joris Bonson.
No, this guy's name is Joey Mellon, and he followed in Hughes's footsteps. So why did he drill a hole in his head? In his own words, it was to get permanently high.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, I saw a YouTube interview with a guy who used to manufacture LSD and accidentally spilt it. And he's like, it's a living hell. Like, my eyes are kaleidoscopes all the time.
Yeah, no, I think being permanently high sounds fucking awful. No, thank you.
Fun fact, though, which is unsurprising considering where he went to school and then university, Joey Mellon had two sons, Rock Basil Hugo Fielding Mellon and Cosmo Birdie Fielding Mellon. And in 2011, Rock Basil, got himself a cabinet position in the Conservative Kensington and Chelsea Council, but was forced out after Grenfell.
This all sounds so pasto. Mm. He was there when Grenfell happened.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Well, he's still around because today he's the director of a new psychedelic venture studio company, and they're devoted to providing safe and wide access to psychedelic medicines. Great. Maybe you should have done some training on fucking cladding, my friend.
So trepanning was, of course, crude, but it was the very first form of psychosurgery, a field that got a lot worse before it got better. Because just 80 years ago, a psychosurgical procedure was carried out around the world that was far more barbaric than trepanning, far more arcane and far more devastating even. This modern procedure was so fucked up, in fact, that the Soviet Union was one of the first global powers to ban it, arguing that it was contrary to the principles of humanity. The USSR made their position clear on the global stage when Soviet psychiatrist Nikolai Ossoreski announced at the World Federation of Mental Health that lobotomies turned an insane person into an idiot.
So what is a lobotomy, exactly? The first ever lobotomy was carried out in 1935 by Portuguese neurologist Antonio Igas Moniz. He believed that by damaging the connection between the frontal lobe and the rest of the brain, he would be able to prevent the patient from experiencing distressing thoughts and exhibiting abnormal behaviours.
Maybe because you'd be so bothered by the hole in your face all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. I'm less worried about all of my other crippling anxieties now that there's a hole in my face.
Yeah. Wouldn't catch me picking my nose now.
Such abnormal behaviour.
If you've read the book, you will already know this, but if you haven't, go and buy it, but also keep listening because I'm going to tell you anyway. The frontal lobe is the part of the brain responsible for higher cognitive functions like memory, emotions, impulse control, problem solving, social interaction, motor function, etc. The prefrontal cortex, which lives in the frontal lobe, is our emergency brake. It stops us from texting our ex or jumping off really high stuff. And if your prefrontal cortex is damaged, you are in big trouble. Psychopaths, for example, have a diminished connection between their emotional center, the amygdala, that's a bit reductive, but get over it, and their prefrontal cortex. So they don't have the little voice telling them to take a deep breath and walk away.
Monis called the first iteration of his surgery a leucoptomy. And like trepanning, it involved drilling holes into the skull. And then, unlike trepanning, pumping ethanol into the frontal cortex to destroy the brain tissue. It's what Dharma was doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, all right, Dharma.
Yeah, yeah.
I think someone wanted a sex zombie, I think.
Overall, the procedure was deemed a success. Although, Moniz did note that using ethanol made it difficult to avoid unintended damage to other parts of the brain.
Shucks.
Well, fuck me. Well, fucking drill a hole in my head and fill it full of ethanol. So he refined this procedure by using a leucotome, a sinister-looking metal instrument, which I guess you could say was the bleeding edge of psychiatric science at the time. It was a kind of a long spike with retractable wires that allowed Moniz to remove chunks of white matter from the patient's brain.
Guess who, despite her parents' wishes, is not a doctor?
I never, ever, ever, ever will be. Sometimes I still see longing in my parents' eyes when you hear, because my dad was like, oh, this guy I've worked with, you know, he's in his 40s and he's just like, I'm going to quit. I'm not going to do the bank stuff anymore. And he's gone and trained as a doctor. And I'm like, uh-huh. <How nice. laughs> I barely made it through an episode about lobotomies. No. Oh my God. I went to like this cocktail making thing a couple of months ago. And the guy who was doing the cocktails, the bartender, I was telling him about the podcast, blah, blah, blah. And then the next day he'd obviously gone and listened to it. And then I got like a flurry of DMs from him being like, oh my God, I love your podcast. And while I was there, I was like, can you make me a red-handed cocktail and I'll like put up the ingredients or whatever. And I kind of feel like he half-assed it and he was just like, I'll do it at the end. And he was like, whatever. And then he messaged me. He's like, please don't post that. I will make you so much better of a red-handed cocktail now that I actually love the show. And I wonder if we get him to do us one, but we call it a leucoctomy.
Maybe.
Because it's like, drill a hole in your head and fill it with ethanol.
I know. Sounds like a fucking disingenuous little prick. I don't know if I want anything to do with him. I don't know. I'm not allowed bartenders anymore. Keep them away from me.
No. Don't worry. He's not buying what you're selling.
The following year, an American neurologist and psychiatrist, Dr. Walter Freeman, which, like, if we had the soundboard, thunderclap.
Oh, should I do it? I don't know what that was. I got confused. Maybe I have had a leucoctomy. And by which I mean a cocktail, not a hole drilled in my head. I thought the cat noise I did was much better in the last
episode.
It's
the same noise. You just added claps.
It was like it came back into my head and then I started clapping.
It's your go-to noise. It's your panic noise. So, Dr. Walter Freeman, bad, bad guy. His partner, Dr. James Watts, bad guy, not quite as bad, but still pretty bad. Both of them became lobotomy evangelists and they popularized the surgery in the US. So basically, it's all their fault. At first, everyone bought into the idea. The New York Times even dubbed it the new surgery of the soul. And in an attempt to make it quicker, cleaner, cheaper, and more accessible, Freeman developed a new method that he called the prefrontal lobotomy. He started off by using an actual ice pick to reach into the patient's prefrontal cortex through their eye socket instead of drilling holes in the skull.
Right. Another method that they came up with was the transorbital lobotomy, which involved a more robust version of the leucotome, called an orbitoclast. Ooh. Freeman would insert the orbitoclast into the top of the eye socket, then tap the top with a hammer to break through the thick layer of bone.
She's going pretty green over here, guys. She's clutching her eyebrows.
It just makes me feel so unwell. And the thick layer of bone that I'm talking about is, of course, the layer of bone that we need to protect our precious fucking thought organ that is your brain. This is horrific. I know that all of this is a reality. I can watch it in horror films, but I'm feeling very queasy right now. Mm. Though I would definitely go to a museum which had all of these on the wall.
Mate, Hunterian, I'm telling you.
Let's go. So once Freeman broke through to the brain, he'd twirl the orbitoclast around like he was mixing a cocktail in order to cut through the fibers. The method took no more than 10 minutes because it didn't require drilling into the skull, and it could be carried out by just knocking a patient unconscious with electroconvulsive shocks.
Well done. You did it. That's the worst bit. Back in Portugal, Moniz, remember him, the guy who invented the whole thing, was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1949 for inventing the lobotomy, which even at the time was a pretty controversial move. A lot of people in the medical and psychiatric communities were adamantly opposed to the idea of sticking needles in people's brains, swirling them around and hoping for the best. And these people became more and more vocal as the results of the surgery became more apparent.
Like we said earlier, lobotomies were initially used to treat mental disorders that up until then had been deemed untreatable. That included schizophrenia, severe OCD, and even depression. And people just accepted that this treatment, quote unquote, would come at the cost of the patient's personality and intellect. Lobotomies were also used as a part of gay conversion therapy as recently as the 60s. But that is a topic for another day.
The effects of the divisive surgery were a mixed bag. Many patients were left with a drastically reduced ability to function independently and displayed serious cognitive impairment. Many more patients died from the procedure or were left in a vegetative state. This is unbelievable.
Under the duvet this week, where we have a little guest joining us.
Wait.
Yeah, that was ideal. Sound buttoning, soundboarding.
It's the only one I remember.
I'll never forget now. I don't know which one makes the cat noise. Oh, wait, that's me. So, should I do that thing that people do on social media that I find inexplicably annoying, where they put their hand behind things that are like too big anyway? But there you go.
We won.
We all won, guys. This is fucking crazy. So Hannah and I obviously went to the British Podcast Awards on Sunday.
Saturday.
And we came home with this glorious jelly-like trophy. Now, you could kill someone with this thing. It's fucking sharp. There we go. We have two. Twins.
Two.
It's so great. So like, obviously we went to the awards. It was in Kennington Park in London. Big tent. It felt like, obviously I didn't go to last year's, but it felt like the biggest one that I had been to. Uh-huh. I'd say like maybe 300 people or so were mm-hmm. there at like the peak time. Went on for fucking ages. We sat through the entire thing.
Unlike literally everyone else there.
Idris Elba was there. With his wife. So that was, pretty cool just to be like, hey, it's Luther. And then we had to go because he presented an award. And then I was like, I know it. I know what's about to happen. And then everyone was like, oh my God, it's Idris Elba. And then he disappeared backstage. And then it was like next up. And I was like, I know we're presenting this next award because we got to do that for the first time this year. And I was like, great. Just follow up, Luther. Why not?
Yeah, no, exactly. It felt so bad for the poor girls that we were presenting.
The last people just got a hug off Idris Elba and you'll get a hug off me.
I kind of look like Ruth Wilson.
You do. So
just a knockoff Ruth Wilson.
Yeah.
That's the next.
There we go. You don't get Idris Elba, but you get Ruth Wilson.
Face double.
She'll give you a hug. And we're only slightly incredibly sweaty because we've been sat in a tent all day. So yes, we had honestly the most incredible time because we won. Like it was great being there. It was really nice to like see a lot of people in the podcasting industry. Hannah and I don't really get to industry events. We don't really leave this office apart from to go home. So it was nice to like go somewhere filled with podcast people.
Yeah.
And it was just the best day. Before we had to go on stage, so we presented an award following Idris Elba. And then we knew that the listener's choice is the second to last category. Mm. The only category that comes after us is podcast of the year. And the way that somebody wins that is every gold winner from every category
apart from listener's choice
gets entered into it, and then they can stand a chance of winning podcast of the year. So we are the penultimate award that we're waiting for, and the one before us is podcast champion.
Yeah,
so they usually give it to somebody who has had a big impact on podcasting personally.
Yeah, so it's like Fern Cotton last year, Adam Buxton's had it, like that sort of level of person.
Exactly. And we were like, I wonder who it will be, because it's the one directly before us.
needless to say, it got incredibly eye wet right before we went on stage. It was a lot.
Oh my, because obviously it was, you know, Dame Dawn died a couple of weeks ago. Yumi and the Big C is an enormous show. So now two of the hosts of Yumi and the Big C have died.
It's about cancer, in case you didn't guess.
And the only remaining host, well, firstly, Carrie Ad Lloyd got up and gave this like rabble-rousing speech about Dame Dawn. And then the final presenter got up and did this whole speech about how cancer affects one in two people and blah, 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 blah. I cannot stop crying. Just could not bring it back. And I knew in my head, I was like, it's next. It's next. It's next. It's next. And you're not going to be able to get it together.
Yeah. It was a lot. It was a lot.
I think, you know, even for someone whose dad did not die of cancer, it would have been quite a lot. But
yeah, because
like,
I was crying, but I was crying mainly because you were crying. but it was like, no one saying it's a lot, like she shouldn't have been allowed to do it. Oh, she fucking killed it.
Yeah,
the host
amazing.
Of
Yumi
and the Big C. There were three of them that started that podcast and two of them have died since. Like, to not feel emotionally overwhelmed by that, like, I don't know how you couldn't. So we were sat in the front row. We were like, Hannah is, you were obviously very upset, completely understandably so. And I was like, I was getting upset. And then I was like, fuck, we have to go on stage in about 30 seconds to accept. Because we didn't know we had won, but we kind of knew we had won.
We had a hunch.
Because we did email them and we were like, listen, have we won? And they were like, we can't tell you, but if you come, you probably won't be disappointed. So we were like, okay, we've won, let's go. And that was only the day before. And so we were waiting there for the results to come through. And just so many crying.
I just knew. And then, so couldn't get it together. And then obviously you come up, did speeches, that was fine. Came off.
More crying.
And then obviously what happens at award shows is after you win an award, you have to go and do several interviews. So not only did I have to have my picture taken about 17,000 times with just like little fucking naked mole rat eyes and just like crying. Also forgot to bring my sunglasses with me, so I couldn't even hide it. And then Suriel had to go off and do an we were supposed to go off and do an interview and I just looked at Suriel and was like, I can't do that. So we just went
You didn't miss much. You didn't miss much.
Hello. Did you enjoy that? Good. Well, if you did, then you can get your ears on so much more bonus content like that every single week by simply heading on over to patreon.com/redhanded. If you go there and sign up, even to be a $5 patron, you'll get weekly episodes of Under the Duvet, which are over an hour long at this point and are essentially the official Red Handed after show party where Hannah and I talk about myriad things. And also, you can get every single episode of Red Handed and Shorthand absolutely ad-free on your podcast player of choice. Terms and conditions apply. So head on over to patreon.com/redhanded and sign up now. And we'll see you there, here and everywhere, like now. Bye.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. Discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.